everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Ray Allen. And Ray's being ably assisted today by our University of Arizona intern. Summer is here. And very nice looking through the glass, seeing Summer. She's learning about the business. And we welcome her to the Buckmaster Show. So the three of us say welcome. And I hope you're having a very good day here on this midweek edition. It's September the 20th. 2017. Wow, the island of Puerto Rico just getting hammered. Is there something about it's a badge of honor for a reporter to stand out there when it's 145, 150 mile an hour winds blowing? That is crazy. I mean, things flying through the air like bullets. It's crazy. 24/7, you can find all of our shows at buckmastershow.com. Got it all archived for you. We live stream the program, buckmastershow.com, KVOI.com, and of course, we're here Monday through Friday during the noon hour. Lots to talk about with Steve Kasacek, Democrat Ward 6. Steve, how are you today, Councilman?
Doing pretty well. That could be Summer's next internship, just send her to Puerto Rico and have her hang onto a street sign and look like a flag. I think those people look absolutely stupid doing that.
It is just, you know, it's crazy. Anyway, the city council, you and your colleagues, took a look at this Honors Village, the Honors College from the University of Arizona. They're proposing on 8 acres between East Adams and East Mabel Streets between North Park and North Santa Rita Avenues. This project includes a residence hall, classroom space, office space, a recreation center, dining hall, and a parking garage. Do you like what you have seen?
Well, sitting out on the Tech Park or some vacant land not in the middle of a residential area, it would be a wonderful project. It's needed. It's a recruiting element for the university as we compete for honors students with the Barrett College up at ASU. So, it's in terms of simply what it is, it's a great project. The village, the amenities it offers to the students are, you know, are top drawer and all that. All that aside, though, it's where it is that is in the process by which it's being developed that is causing the problems. The zoning rules that are in place in the city, not just this city, but any city, they're in place so that people have some certainty in terms of what's going to happen around them when they make an investment in their home. This Honors College is going in next to residential areas. The way it's being crafted, it being the deal, the way the deal is being crafted is that American Campus Communities, the private developer, is giving the land to the university so that it can avoid the rezoning process. Through a rezoning process, the surrounding residents have a voice in the size and the scale and the massing and traffic flow and all those kinds of things. Once the land becomes owned by the state, though, they are not subject to city zoning rules. That's really principally intended for projects sitting on the university campus, not outside their planning boundary. And that's where this is. And so that's the rub. The American Campus Communities, they came with a very, very similar proposal about 4 or 5 years ago. At the time, indicated an interest and a willingness to go through the regular rezoning process, met with some of the neighborhood groups around campus, a couple of the historic neighborhoods, and met with some resistance, and that was predictable resistance. It's about 1,100 new beds across in 6 stories across the street from single-family residences. And so instead of going through that process, they are effectively making an end run by donating the land to the state and then building on it anyway. That's the rub, Bill. The project is great, wonderful project, but the process is very troubling. And even beyond the fact that this, you know, for the people who would say, hey, you should know what to expect when you're buying a house around campus, the fact is that this is outside of the university's planning boundary, for one thing. And the second thing is that if this template moves forward by which a private housing developer, student housing developer, can simply give or donate land to the university and then build whatever they want on it. This could happen anywhere in the city, not just around campus. And so it's the template that is equally troubling, because it's replicable anywhere. And so yesterday at the council meeting, we had representatives from the university there, along with their land use attorney. And what we agreed to was vacating one of the streets that bisects this property, on the condition that, number one, we see a land use agreement eventually that we feel that we cannot challenge. Right now, the city attorney's position is that the way this deal is being crafted, it's still largely a commercial deal and should be subject to city zoning. The U of A will come back with a land use agreement at some point. We'll make that assessment then. And the second thing we put on the table yesterday were several conditions having to do with fixing Park Avenue and various kinds of conditions that you would normally see if it had gone through a regular zoning process. So it's moving forward. It likely will be, the final box will likely be checked at some point when the Board of Regents approves the land use agreement, probably in October. But again, and I work on campus, and so my concern is the credibility of this institution in the wider community. And in my eye, this is a black mark on that credibility.
All right, Jim Kelly has joined us. Jim has a question for Steve Kasachek. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Steve. Val State was recently annexed into the city. Do we know what our precinct is going to be and what ward Val State is going to become a part of?
I don't know. What's the general area?
TIA, Valencia, and Swan.
Okay. Valencia, Swan, I'm guessing it would be a Ward 4, probably, or 5, but we don't know yet. I have your contact information. I will give a check, and I'll circle back with you.
Alrighty, thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Also, Steve, and we should point out, of course, you are a University of Arizona employee. Does that at all affect your decision on this Honors Dorm project?
No, in fact, first of all, I'm not conflicted out because I work in the athletics department, and there's no direct connection between the Honors College and the athletics department. More to the point, though, I am a university employee, and so one might think that I'd be walking on some eggshells and taking a contrary position. And in fact, I've met with President Robbins, and we had quite a 90-minute one-on-one conversation about exactly this. And we've also spoken on the phone about it. I'm just laying out my honest feeling. I'm representing the constituents around campus that are part of Ward 6. I am concerned about the reputation of the university, both being an employee here and just recognizing the value it has to this community economically and educationally. So, I'm concerned about the way this project is moving forward. And President Robbins and I have had this conversation personally. I respect the fact that he is in a very tough position. He walked into this to his new job while this project was rounding third and headed for home. So he was handed a very very serious community relations issue when he walked in the door, gift left to him by former President Hart. And he's doing his best to deal with it. He's under a lot of pressure from the state legislature, from the tri-state university system, because by state statute, once the land becomes state property, he cannot subject himself to city zoning, or he'd be pilloried by the rest of the state institutions for having given away something that's his by right by statute. So I respect and understand his position. He was handed a lump of coal, and he's trying to manage it the best he can by sending his people out into the community to have conversations. As though this were a rezoning process. The fact is, though, that these conversations do not have the force of legal force that they would have if they went through the regular process.
All right, we're going to take the break a minute early because I've got some very important items I still want to bring up, and 1 minute will not take care of it. So we'll take the First break here. Steve Kasachek, Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman, joins us after the break. Be right back.
Since 1944, the Humane Society of Southern Arizona has helped over 1 million pets in Southern Arizona. I'm Richard Carmona, 17th Surgeon General of the United States and Distinguished Professor at the University of Arizona. Join me in supporting the Humane Society of Southern Arizona in their effort to build a new animal welfare center. Keeping the pets in our community safe and healthy helps ensure that our community as a whole is safe and healthy. Please donate now, because we are all in this together.
The Twisted Tandoor, the legendary Indian food truck, now has a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu expands on the popular Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, it's at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive and on the web at thetwistedtandoor.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. And improved mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Thursday at noon, a newsmaker interview with Arizona Superintendent of Schools, Diane Douglas. Also, we'll talk with Oro Valley Mayor, Dr. Satish Hiremath. Buckmaster airs noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI. We've got our worldwide live listening podcasts and show archive at buckmastershow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, live streaming at KVOI.com and BuckmasterShow.com. Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek with us. Councilman, what's the fallout been from the Tucson gun destruction case where the court left, in effect, Senate Bill 1487 intact?
Well, that really is the most important. That question really represents the most important piece of that court decision, because the gun destruction piece of it was a city ordinance that we had and we've had in place for over a decade. The court had a number of issues in front of it. One of them was very simply, is that ordinance preempted by state law? They took the position that yes, it was, and so the ordinance has been repealed. But more importantly than that, the court had in front of it the underlying statute by which that case wound up in front of them, and that is SB 1487, Senate Bill 1487. We took the position, and we didn't. This wasn't just unsolicited position. We were asked by the state Supreme Court to include in our briefs our positions with respect to the constitutionality of 1487, and our position was that it's fundamentally unconstitutional. It violates separation of powers. It violates due process. There are multiple deficiencies in that law. The result that was handed down completely avoided ruling on those constitutional questions. And what we have, we also have a case pending in the Superior Court on this exact same issue. Once the court decided that our ordinance was preempted by state law and we repealed it, there's no basis on which that we have now to move forward in the Superior Court because the question is resolved. We repealed the ordinance. So what we have now is what we believe to be an unconstitutional law still on the books at the state level. And recently, in fact, just last week, Senator Kavanaugh from the Maricopa County area filed an investigation, a complaint under 1487 against the city of Phoenix. He's not going after one of their ordinances, something that's on the books adopted by the governing body up there. What he's poking at are some of their policies, some of just the policies by which they operate and manage their business at the city level. In this case, he's going after some of the police policies, what are called their general orders. In the way that they interact with immigrants, and he's citing SB 1070 and bringing that back to the forefront. So there are a few moving pieces on this. Number one, he's reintroduced a potential federal question, which could push the whole SB 1070 question back into federal court. And there are only a couple of pieces of that left standing, and one of them is the "Show Me Your Papers, Please" piece that Attorney General Brnovich did not want to have relitigated. Because he was concerned about it getting overturned, and so now Kavanaugh has forced that question back potentially in front of a federal court. So Brnovich can't be happy with that. Most importantly for me, though, not most importantly, but equally importantly for me at our level, is that the state legislature is going to take 1487 and start looking at policies and procedures that we have at the local level, not just the city of Tucson, but any city or jurisdiction in the state. That is just gross mismanagement of the overstep of the state legislature into getting how we just simply manage our affairs at the local level. And we have to find a way now to get this thing in the 1487 in front of a superior court to show that this is just an overstep, it's an overreach. And it just never ceases to amaze me, Bill, that these are the same guys who cry foul when the federal government steps into the state's stuff and circling back to 1070 again, where the state wanted to take on a federal role and do immigration policy. And the district courts and appeals courts and U.S. Supreme Court have said that's a federal issue and the state needs to stay out of it. And yet, that same principle doesn't apply when they say, well, we want to tell the localities how to do their business. And so philosophically, it's inconsistent. I've heard it before time and again that you guys, the city is a creature of the state. Well, in fact, we are not a creature of the state. We have a charter that's over 100 years old that was not adopted by the city council, but was voted on by the voters, and the courts have recognized it time and again. So we'll continue to have the argument. It'll wind up back in court again, but the real concern is how deeply into local policies, not ordinances, but just simple policies, can the state legislature dip their pen and put $115 million of our state shared revenues at risk if they don't like one of our policies? That's really an important issue.
We certainly will be following that. Chuck has called us at 790-2040. Hey, Chuck, you're with Steve Kosacek.
Hi, Councilman Kosacek.
Hi, Chuck.
I apologize for not knowing where this exactly came from, but there's a new listing of the best and worst cities in Arizona to live. we finished dead last because of our high crime rate, high unemployment, schools, and a couple other things. So I was just wanting to get your thoughts on what you make out, you know, about this. Thank you.
Sure. First of all, I don't know where it came from either, so I'm not going to talk about the source because I don't know the source. I see we were just, as a matter of fact, last week we were recognized as one of the by the International Festival and Events Commission as one of the top 10 in the world for festivals and events. And we, you know, see, you can look at these one-off analyses if you want. I will stand up next to anybody and be proud of the good news that we have in the city of Tucson in terms of the progress that we have made coming out of the recession. We have over $500 million in private sector investment in the downtown core itself. You go down there any day of the week and you can talk about, you know, visit the Rialto or the Fox or Museum of Contemporary Art, the TCC. We just announced yesterday a second season starting with the Tucson Roadrunners downtown, the downtown core. We have a ton going on and a lot of private sector investment. We're bringing Caterpillar in. We just announced over 2,000 more jobs for Raytheon, you know, Comcast, and on and on. So I'm a little tired of the negative cliched rhetoric that these, you know, people keep throwing out. It does not reflect the hard work that we've done to successfully move our way out of the recession. We are there. We are moving our way successfully out of it. When I took this job 8 years ago, we were in litigation with Rio Nuevo. We were fighting with the county. We are 180 degrees different now. We're working in a strong partnership with both of those entities and making good progress.
Yeah, so many of these surveys are coming out to fulfill the 24-hour news cycle.
Sure.
And certainly on the internet, we're seeing a lot of these kind of quick surveys that are done about best and worst places to live. But anyway, what about landscaping some of this, trying to, for private development, to divert stormwater from city streets onto private properties that would actually help with the landscaping situation?
Yeah, we had this yesterday, and I brought this to the study session just out of a sense of frustration at having city staff tell private developers that if they wanted to divert stormwater onto their private property, that they were not allowed to do that for several reasons. One, there was this notion that there's some prior appropriation, prior rights downstream from stormwater that's flowing down our city streets. And so if we allowed a private developer to divert it onto private property, somebody in Marana could sue us. And I think that's just ludicrous. As a result of urbanization, we could take all of the water that's flowing down our city streets and divert it into private property, and we still wouldn't get into the infiltration that happened prior to the urbanization and development. There was also a concern about liability. What if we allow someone to divert water onto their property and it winds up flooding their adjacent neighbor's house? Well, then do a soils test and make them design the basins and the landscaping such that it's capturing the water and not sheet flowing off into their neighbor. And that's something that we require of developers anyway. You know, they're already doing analyses about their water retention, so just make sure they're designing appropriately. And then there was a gift clause question, so that we can't let somebody take that public good and use it unless we can demonstrate a value. And Bill, we can absolutely monetize the infiltration. We know what water costs. We send people a bill for it every month, and so measure the amount that's being captured and put that value on it. And I would even go so far as to say, if you're using that water out in an area like Sabino Canyon, on a riparian area on your private property that's totally dependent on groundwater, we ought to be even increasing that value because that area is pristine and we need to preserve it. So we finally got the city staff to say it's not illegal. And going even beyond that is not only do we encourage this, but I'd like to see us jump people to the front of the line. If you got a single acre or a subdivision that you're doing, if you're going to divert water off of our streets to the benefit of your private property, you're increasing the tree canopy. There's the heat island effect and all that kind of stuff that we know just intuitively and empirically. that's good for the region, then encourage people to do that, and let's just get out of our own way and invite people for that to do that kind of development.
Because the runoff's not doing anybody any good right now, is it?
No, and it's ruining the streets, and you know, so the other point I made to that point is that right now we have the Department of Transportation kind of managing our stormwater policy, and to TDOT, stormwater is a nuisance. I argued yesterday that we ought to have Tucson Water being the one who manages this, because they recognize it as an asset that can be used for good things and not just a nuisance to be looked at that way.
All right, Steve Kasachek, thank you very much. Were you out for your morning run, and did you notice today it's starting to feel a little cooler for the first time since May?
It was a little cooler before 6 o'clock, yeah.
Okay. Have a great day. Thank you very much. Steve Kasachek, Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman, a Democrat, and we will be right back on the Buckmaster Show. What are the lessons we can learn from Katrina and Harvey and now Maria? That's next. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Phillips Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Phillips Plaza.
Hi, Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico make a great weekend getaway, or longer, why not? Just 3 hours from Tucson and about 15 degrees cooler. What a beautiful time of year to hike in the Gila National Wilderness, do some camping there, explore historic Silver City, or just hang out and relax in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the great places to stay and the many recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Well, 2017, especially the last couple of months, really have been a hurricane season for the ages in North America, with monsters like Harvey, Irma, and now Maria pounding the island of Puerto Rico. Writer Susan Zakin, a part-time Tucson resident whose ebook is titled Hurricane Season: What Katrina Taught America, was recently chosen as a Kindle single. She is now writing about Hurricane Harvey for the LA Review of Books. Susan is the author of Coyotes and Town Dogs, Earth First and the Environmental Movement. Another recent work is a collection of her writing on Africa, with a book titled Waiting for Charlie, Mercenary Soldiers, Failed States, and The Love That Means More Than Money. She joins us now from New York. Susan, how are you?
I'm very well. Great to be with you again, Bill.
Thank you very much. This is just amazing what's going on now with Maria on the heels of Irma, and of course Harvey just parking over the Houston area. Normally you think of hurricanes kind of swiftly moving through an area. This one just stayed around for a while. And of course, your first exposure, I guess, was to Katrina, when you really took a deep dive into that situation. And the obvious question is, why didn't we learn from Katrina? Certainly, why didn't Houston learn in changing some of their building codes, Susan Zakin?
You know, that's a great question, and I think the answer has to be human nature. But also, I wonder if we analyzed what happened with Katrina the way we really needed to. You know, I'm thinking about these hurricanes as, you know, everybody talks about fair weather friends, that you have a very good friendship, but then when something happens, the death of a parent or some tragic thing happens in your life, you find out that person really isn't a good friend, or you find out that person is a better friend than you ever thought. Like our human relationships, I think these hurricanes really literally rip the roof off and show us things about our society that we need to attend to. With Katrina, I mean, I think some things we did learn, and other lessons maybe we didn't really pay as much attention to.
What did we learn?
Well, I think when we look at what FEMA and how FEMA behaved with Harvey, FEMA really learned its lesson from Katrina. FEMA was prepared for Harvey. There was good coordination, and it didn't do so well, as we know, with Katrina. But I think Katrina's real lesson, I have a little bit more to say about FEMA because they're facing some new challenges. But I think what we didn't really pay attention to, it was such a wake-up call about inequality. I mean, it was, you know, you remember, Bill, it was really stark. You know, mm-hmm. the white folks heading, you know, these are generalizations, and race certainly not being the only issue. But the white folks heading out of town in their cars and the black folks sweltering in the Superdome.
Right.
You know, that was so stark. And I think it had, you know, whether it's conscious or not, those images really seeped in for us. But what it wasn't, I think we need to look more closely at that, because there are a lot of historical reasons for inequality in New Orleans. But the inequality that we saw, it's not just historic. What we didn't look at in New Orleans is incredible corruption. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that really got exposed in Katrina, and maybe we didn't pay enough attention to.
I was going to say that with Hurricane Harvey, you saw people of all colors, which was wonderful, coming together, and you saw that people just sort of took things into their own hands and helped their neighbors.
Well, you know, that's so interesting, and Harvey was really, really different. You know, that corruption, though, is sort of a common theme. What I think Harvey showed us, see, here FEMA did very well, but what are the pictures we remember? I mean, I was in tears, really, looking at the Cajun Navy coming in,
right.
Those folks from Louisiana caravanning, towing their boats. Very touching, and remember all those pictures of the people holding hands against the current
mm-hmm.
to save people, many of them Hispanic, and, you know, the way people pitched in. So let's look at that for a second. FEMA learned its lesson from Katrina, and I did want to mention that until these hurricanes hit, the Trump administration was going to eviscerate their budget. So, but that's part of the story as well, I think. FEMA coordinated well with local agencies, regional, state, and local agencies, and it still wasn't enough.
Well, you know, with what's going to happen with what's left on Puerto Rico, that island is going to have to be rebuilt practically from scratch. If some of these reports were getting just the devastation of Puerto Rico, it's really the first time possibly since 1928, the strongest storm. But, I mean, you can imagine what that's going to do to the infrastructure there. And FEMA's budget, my goodness, what is all of this going to cost with Harvey and Irma and now Maria?
And how many times can we do it?
Yeah.
So we're looking at a government that has already been starved into submission. And Houston, I'm sure this struck you too, fourth largest city mm-hmm. in the United States, no zoning.
Yeah, that's it.
So, and grew very, very fast, a lot like Phoenix and Tucson. And mm-hmm. And so you know that the real estate developers there have a lot of clout. So the question is, where does Houston go from here? And the other question is, I just got off the phone last night with a guy who works in Texas. He's in the MAP division. And I said, wow, how come so many people weren't forced to get flood insurance? You know, FEMA is not tasked with projecting into the future in their mapping. So their mapping is really based on insurance. So, you know, with we have to first acknowledge that there's such a thing as climate change. Or if you can't bring yourself to say those words, then say, wow, there are a lot of hurricanes these days.
Well, one thing is for certain, the water in the Atlantic is certainly making these hurricanes very strong, because it is so warm right now.
That's right, and really the scientific community has agreed that climate change is indeed real, but I think these are the two issues we need to deal with. I almost feel like just as important as dealing with perhaps changes in the climate, changes in infrastructure, to do any of that, honestly, I think we need to look at corruption. You know, it's not just in other countries. We need to make sure that our communities are run with clean politics and our country. Frankly, I think that's corruption is the issue that nobody is looking at because the left and the right are so busy throwing bombs at each other and name-calling. They're not looking at that hand in their pocket.
Very, very distracting, isn't it, Susan Zakin? Susan, you know, I first met you when your book came out. When was that, Coyotes and Town Dogs?
Is that like asking an actress how old she is?
Well, no, because I have a quick question about the environmental movement.
Yeah. It was about 20 years ago now.
Unbelievable.
I know.
I'm just wondering, in the minute or so remaining, whatever happened or is that environmental movement, at least here in Tucson, still around and still strong?
You mean the Earth First folks?
Yeah.
Well,
now what has evolved into some other groups, like the Center for Biological Diversity is very strong and based here. Just generally,
yeah.
how do you see the environmental movement here in Southern Arizona?
You know, I think that the movement is still full of folks who really put biology first, and I don't. I think sometimes they. You know, people get very heated in political battles and everybody kind of, you know, people do tend to sometimes lose sight of the whole picture. But the great difference I see in Tucson, environmentalists, is they are really in touch with that landscape. And, you know, folks in D.C. sometimes forget that that's the bedrock. That's really what moves them. Not all of them, but the, you know, the Center for Biological Diversity has become like Google or something. They're huge.
Yeah.
But there are smaller groups too, and I want to really applaud, people who are, in the community groups, around Tucson because, you know, again, this is, there are the underfunded or unfunded volunteers. And they're often outgunned.
All right.
Susan,
I'm going to have to run. Where can people find out more about you?
SusanZakin.com, Z-A-K-I-N, Susan, SusanZakin.com. And they can buy the book, Hurricane Season, which is not so political, actually. It's really a portrait of New Orleans and the bayous. And that's on Amazon, Hurricane Season, What Katrina Taught America. And thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you very much, Susan Zakin, speaking with us from New York. Billy Kovacs, one of five Democrats running in CD2, hoping they will win the primary and then go on to face Martha McSally. But Billy's next, right after this. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
What comes to mind when you envision the holidays? If it means surrounding yourself with family and friends as you welcome treasured traditions, just imagine if those moments were paired with sinking your toes in fine white sand and exploring quaint seaside towns. This winter, spend your holiday with a sense of adventure on a family reunion vacation. At Bon Voyage, we specialize in bringing generations together through travel. This is the perfect time to plan. Call Bon Voyage Travel at 797-1110.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. 10 minutes now toward 1 o'clock on our midweek edition of Buckmaster. This portion presented by our friends over at Green Things. If you're into gardening like I am, wow, Green Things is like the place to get everything you need that has to do with gardening, anything green, basically. They're on now 13 acres, 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, gardening supplies, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk, and they're on the web at greenthingsaz.com, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. We welcome now back to the program Billy Kovacs. Billy is one of the five Democrats who are running to and hope, each hoping that they will win the Democratic primary next year and then face off against Congresswoman Martha McSally. Billy, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
Well, when we first talked to you, you were just really pretty much putting your feet in the water in this political arena. Now, a couple of months later, how has it gone for you?
I'm in the deep end.
You're in.
Yeah, you know, 6 months.
30 years old. Right?
30 years old, yes.
30, right. Youngest candidate by far in this pool of candidates. So again, how has it gone for you?
Yeah, it's for myself and the campaign, I think we are putting an amazing amount of effort into getting back to where people want to see a U.S. representative, and it's at their doorstep. It's, you know, at an event that's maybe a mile or two away from them, and really giving them access to representation. And you've seen that with me hitting all 42 cities within the district, knocking about 3,000 doors already, and then meeting over, I'd say, thousands of people in the last 150 events that I've done in the last 5.5 months. So really getting out there and understanding that this is a campaign that is full of energy, is full of support, and it's something where I have an open door policy if you want to ask me a question. And really get to know me as a candidate and who I am as a person.
Tell our listeners again who you are and why you decided to run.
You know, I get asked that a lot. And right. There's so many points in my life that have pushed me to why I wanted to be civically engaged, and especially this seat. You know, I have a vast amount of energy and past about looking at state and local issues. I was a former Flynn Brown Fellow last year. It's the Arizona Center for Civic Leadership, bipartisan or nonpartisan organization to cultivate state leaders on every single state issue. So an in-depth knowledge of every single department, every single issue. And then with the city of Tucson, you know, I put myself out there to spur economic development, to help young entrepreneurs within the University of Arizona, Pima Community College, and Startup Tucson and a few other organizations, but really build that economy from each individual rather than just talking about the big companies that we can attain, but what can we retain in our young population here?
Are people surprised when you tell them, hey, I'm Billy Kovacs, I'm 30 years old, I'm running for Congress?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
It's a... I get a glow coming up, and they're like, thank you.
You think they're looking for new faces?
I do. You know, I just had last month, or about a month and a half ago, in Green Valley. You know, I went to the Democratic group of the Santa Ritas, and it's about a group of 50 to 75 people. And at the end, they all came up to me, and a vast amount came up to me and said, thank you for taking the baton of what we've done in our past and showing that a new generation is putting forward the things that we've always been working on. And they really see that as me as the face of the new generation of leadership that is resonating within our district. And you see that around the nation as well with a lot of these contested primaries, people coming up and having their voices heard and responding to the actual needs of what people are concerned about.
And of course, healthcare is such a huge issue, and you are articulating a position that's pretty straightforward, are you not?
Yes. You know, we came out before a lot of this Senate and House bills came out for Medicare for All. You know, I spent a good amount of time at the People's Summit up in Chicago with national nurses unions. There's, you know, obviously Senator Sanders' campaign and a few other national groups really looking at what Medicare for All's benefits are, and especially in a state like us. You know, we're pushing that again and again and again, and really going to see what comes out of this Senate bill.
Would in effect push healthcare back to the states.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate when you see, you know, 10 governors come out and, you know, go to Mitch McConnell and say, we do not need this, especially for a state like us that had a large concerted effort for Medicaid expansion. And we are one of the states that will be hit the hardest by this Graham-Cassidy bill. So that's why we push Medicare for All. And even, you know, in the intermediate time, fixing the ACA and the problems that we can, so we're not in a sinking ship as we float on to what should be universal health care and Medicare for All.
And what about DACA, the DACA recipients? You think that Congress will be able to come up with something in 6 months?
You know, I wish they would have...
For the dreamers?
I wish they would have done this, you know, back when it wasn't in a campaign cycle. That's the biggest thing I hear in the community is we've been fighting for this every single day for the last 6 to 8 years. Where was this when it wasn't, you know, let's say 12 months out?
Yeah, because it will be pretty much in the midst now. It's done in 6 months, people will really be focusing on the midterm elections.
Correct. And I don't like how that's being used as a political coin. But I do hope and I do think there's enough political will within the Republican Party to pass comprehensive immigration reform, including a lot of the members of our community that are protected by DACA.
You said at the Sierra Vista event, which was recently held, and that's really the first time that all five of the Democrats got together, you said, I am not running against Martha McSally. I am not running against Donald Trump. I'm running against what they stand for.
Yeah, I've built myself in this community by reaching out to other members and stepping back and really seeing the needs that what we need to push forward. And I don't see that in our representation. I'm not running against Martha McSally or Donald Trump as people. I'm running what they come out for. I'm running about the bills that they sign on for that are detriments, even if they're passed or not, but what they're actually doing to spur growth in, let's say, the district or the state or the nation, and really paying attention to what people's needs are at the kitchen table. That's the things that we should be focusing on. And, you know, I disagree. She's a great woman. I disagree with her policies and where she thinks the direction of our district needs to go. And I'll fight for that every single day.
You're certainly not attacking her service to this country or
absolutely
anything like that.
Not. No. Martha's, I mean, Congresswoman McSally has put herself on the line every single day for over 25 years in our armed services. And I have the utmost respect for what she's done for our country and what she continues to do. I just disagree with her policies and where she stands. She's a wonderful woman. I've met her and her dog, and Boomer. It's real. Boomer's a real dog.
Boomer's really cool, isn't he?
Yeah. So, you know, and I can disagree with her. But that's where we need to get back into politics, is that I can recognize who she is as a person and understand that she's a great lady. I just disagree with her policies. And that's where nationally we need to break this divisiveness and understand that we are people at the beginning of the day that can move the ball forward by finding commonalities between two people and then pushing something that works for everyone.
How many communities did you say you've visited?
I've been to all 42 cities.
There
in the,
are 42.
Isn't that crazy?
I learned something. That's why I like this job. Yeah. I learned something every day. I didn't know there were 42 communities, entities, cities, towns, whatever, in the district.
I'll tell you, if you want to go to Portal.
Portal? Yeah, okay.
I'll tell you the long way to get there. All right.
Billy, we're out of time. Thanks so much. Billy Kovacs, Democrat. CD2, where do people find out more about Mr. Kovacs?
You know, message me on Facebook at Kovacs for Congress or Kovacs for Congress on the internet as well. And if you ever want to have a face-to-face cup of coffee, just message me there and we'll set it up.
Thanks a lot, Billy Kovacs.
Thank you, Bill.
Coming up this afternoon, Mike Chack with Mike Shaw from 4 to 5. Ray Allen will help Mike out. They'll put together a great show, and then tomorrow morning, wake up Tucson 6 to 9. Buckmaster back with you tomorrow at 12:04. Have a great afternoon.